Hello, hello. Welcome to Beyond ADHD, A Physician's Perspective. I am Dr. Diana Mercado Marmarash, a dedicated family medicine physician based in the heart of rural Texas. I once saw my ADHD as a hindrance, but now I recognize it as a unique gift that empowers me to be the person I was always meant to be. Join me on this transformative journey as we explore how ADHD, anxiety, and depression can be understood, managed, and ultimately embraced. Over the years, I've learned that unlearning certain beliefs and habits is just as crucial as learning new skills, and I'm excited to share these insights with you. Join me as we engage in candid conversations with experts, exploring actionable strategies to thrive amidst these conditions. Together, we'll uncover practical insights that extend beyond the confines of traditional medicine, unlocking the true potential of a fulfilled life. Thank you for joining me on this incredible journey.
Well, hello, hello. I am so excited to be here with a dear friend of mine who is going to guide us regarding the ADHD medication myths. And she is actually a psychiatrist and she works in North Carolina. And her name is Dr. Randy Shafter. And tell me a little bit about yourself and how you decided to go into psychiatry.
I like listening to people and people like talking to me. It's that pretty simple. Actually, so I started out as a psych major in college. And as I was learning all of the tools and tricks of the trade, I realized that maybe I needed more tools. Like, what if they were talking to me and I felt like there was more to be done? And I didn't have them. And I thought, okay, I want to go to med school. And then I was nervous. My dad's a doctor. He was crazy smart. And I didn't know if I could do it. And a friend of mine was like, dude, yes, your dad's amazing, but there's other guys out there. They're not as amazing. And they are doctors. You could do this. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. And I did. And I love it. And so here I am, more tools. So I use both a little behavioral approach, cognitive, you know, you name it. All the different therapies that I could ever imagine to learn and some medicine too.
Awesome. And what do you enjoy doing these days? Is there anything that other than medicine that really lights your soul?
I do a lot of therapy with my patients. I don't just do medication management, which is wonderful for me. I'm in a private practice, which allows me the privilege of treating patients how I choose to and not letting insurance companies dictate how I run my show. And so I treat women and children primarily. I have a special passion for treating women physicians. I find the intellectual dialogue extremely wonderful. And the style and types of therapies that I use vary based on who the person is and what they need. So often it includes meditation, mindfulness. Sometimes it's dialectical therapy approach. Sometimes it's CBT. Sometimes we talk about our moms and our dads. It's really wherever it needs to go, that's going to best help them.
That's amazing. And I know that you have like a special place in your heart regarding ADHD, right? So I am so excited to have you here today to talk about the common ADHD myths, because there's a lot of them. Could you tell me from your years of practice if there's certain patterns that you have noticed? And then what do you usually do to tackle some of those?
Sure. So one of the myths are, well, they did so well at school, they can't have ADHD. And so ADHD has nothing to do with our intelligence, clearly, because I know tons of doctors that have ADHD. I, for one of them, managed to. I think that when I was a child, my mother used to say to me, if your head wasn't attached to you, you'd probably lose that too. That was like the famous joke in my house. And ADHD is obviously genetic, so apples and trees. And, you know, my dad was a doctor and he probably had ADHD too, although it wasn't diagnosed at that stage in the game, at least for my family. And my kids have it and my husband has it and we all, it's a very fun house. But, and so it presents differently in different people, that often ADHD inattentive type and anxiety can get confusing. Sometimes it happens together and that's even more confusing. And so you have to tease the two out. Another myth or confusing thing is that people believe that anyone that takes ADHD medications, it helps everybody. So everybody would benefit. And that's not necessarily the case. I think that people that abuse it are not using it to get concentration and focus. They're getting it because they get a high. That is a very different reaction than someone who actually uses it because it helps them normalize how their brain functions so that they can actually live their life with their brain functioning and different cylinders, so work and things seem more clear. That some side effects are not always side effects. They are a secondary effect of how they manage one side effect. So for example, if we lose our appetite and we don't eat, then we get a headache. So sometimes a headache isn't necessarily a side effect of the medicine, it's a side effect of not eating or being dehydrated. So if we actually take our medicine with food in the morning, then some of the other side effects don't actually happen. So we can kind of make a couple changes about how we handle our meds, and then everything is a lot better.
So let me make sure that I captured some of the ones that you said, which is that if you're too smart, you can't have ADHD. So that's one of them. Another one was that everybody is going to abuse the ADHD medication. And then the other one was that a headache might be a side effect of ADHD medication withdrawal or coming off of a medication or just using the medication. But as you just pointed out, it could be that if in the first place you're not drinking enough water and this medication can deplete that, it can not necessarily mean that it's a side effect. And I often have to talk to people about them not wanting to start on meds because they get so afraid that they're going to become addicted to them. They're going to become desensitized to them, and therefore they don't want to take them during the weekends. They only want to take it when they're at work or something like that. And I always tell them, I'm like, well, you know, your family needs you to function all the other times too, especially on the weekends. If you're driving different places or trying to complete projects, it could actually be a safety issue. I mean, I wouldn't tell my patients not to take their high blood pressure meds or their diabetes meds or their heart meds on the weekends just because, well, they might become too sensitive to them, right? So sometimes those are the kind of myths that I'm fighting against. Have you noticed that yourself?
100%. It's like this badge of honor that, like, I'm tough and I can survive. So there's this concept, you know, there's data to show that people who are young, who have ADHD that are untreated, are actually at a higher risk for substance abuse than those that are medicated appropriately. That without treatment, you become more impulsive and you try to manage your emotions and your behaviors. And so you seek out other things that may not be so healthy. Whereas if you're treated appropriately, then those behaviors are less likely to happen and you're actually safer. Same for the rocky relationships and the breakups and the job that don't last in relationship struggles. If you're medicated appropriately, then that is less likely to be havoc all over. And so the badge of honor is not really a necessary thing. Now, if you're having side effects and, you know, you have low appetite and you've tried a whole bunch of different things and you've tried other things to mitigate that, then sometimes having a drug holiday to kind of boost your appetite every so often if you need to grow can be helpful. But that depends, right? So for some people, the issue is if you stop every weekend and then you start on Monday, it's like you're starting over. So actually the side effects can be worse. But if you kept going for a whole month, your body actually might get a little bit used to the side effects and they won't be so bothersome. If you're exquisitely sensitive and you're in that less than 1% and you're not gaining weight and it's happening over time and we're seeing this change in growth and you're a child, then yeah, a summer off to go eat and bulk up, go ahead, and then gradually titrate that medicine. And of course, that's if you've tried this ADHD med and that ADHD med and maybe a little periactin, which is an appetite and antihistamine that might help with appetite. But that's not often. Get used to it.
Yeah, so it's important that obviously you check with all this with your physician to figure out, because like you just said, it's a person-to-person basis and what might work for one might not work for the other. So it's really important that you actually document stuff because we forget. Like we forget what happened yesterday and we think it was working well and it really wasn't, or we think it wasn't working well until you do like a objective questionnaire and you compare and you notice that, oh yeah, I did improve. And so just like we ask people to check for their sugar levels or their blood pressure levels, it would be good to keep a track on like, hey, how many projects did I complete this week? Or how many times did I not run late? Like it sounds silly. Or when did I start to feel drained? Was it like at 3 p.m. or was it like at noon? And then you can gauge how long the medication is actually staying in your system. Because then that's how as a provider, we can enhance whatever med you're on, because if we don't know the data, because you're not even aware, then it's really hard for me to be aware to optimize it.
So when I use something that's a non-stimulant, right, because they don't work as immediately. So let's say Qelbree or Strattera or Cafe or Intunip, those are not the ADHD, like what you normally know, like the Adderall, Concerta, Ritalin type, right? I usually give them something called a progress tracker where they start at zero and every week that they're on it, they kind of give themselves a rating scale, because since it's so slow in its effectiveness, they're kind of like, well, I don't know if it's really working. But if they compared zero to week eight, they'd be like, oh, actually it is better. And they realize, but with, you know, a stimulant, if they'd had that first, they like notice 2-4 hours later, oh, this is so different. And so since the other ones are gradual, they're thinking, well, it's not really working, but it's because it's over this span of time. And so sometimes exactly what you're saying, there needs to be this recorded change. And so if it's subtle, it's not as obvious over time, even though they may be helpful. And then, yes, you want to know, when does it stop working as well? When does it, you know, is there like a crash? Some of them have a crash and then that might not be as appropriate. There are currently 39 FDA-approved ADHD medications, so clearly there are all different shapes and sizes, so that there are ways to find ones that work. And then there's a whole bunch of off-label, right? There's all kinds of ways.
So have you used any, I know that usually emotional regulation is one of the executive function tools that is not brought up as much. Although, you know, when people think of ADHD, they usually go to impulsivity and they go to like lack of attention, right? But they don't really realize that emotional regulation is something else that is part of ADHD and can easily cause somebody to get into trouble if you pair that with impulsivity and say out loud what maybe you should have had the 2-second delay to think before you speak. Have you noticed any particular meds that can help with that?
So you mean a filter? Actually, stimulants are helpful with the pause for most people if they don't have an anxiety disorder that comes along with, right? So when you have anxiety and you take a stimulant, for many people, and the anxiety is related not to their ADHD, right? So if your anxiety is, oh my God, I can't get my work in time, I'm always late, this homework is so hard, I can't concentrate, and you take an ADHD medication, that anxiety gets better. If your anxiety is, does he like me? Am I good enough? You know, that kind of what's going to happen in the future? What am I going to look like tomorrow? Those kinds of worries, that's not an ADHD kind of anxiety, and that may get worse. And so if you take a stimulant with that, that gets magnified a little bit. So if that emotion regulation piece, the stimulant may not be so helpful, right? But for those that are impulsive and it's just the ADHD, impulsive stimulants can be really helpful.
Yeah. And I've seen, and myself, I have used for some people like off-label, like you said, maybe clonidine or guanfacine has been able to help some of them, especially if they have a little bit of insomnia or they have this pattern of reminiscing of, did I do that? Should I have done that? Am I good enough? Like you're saying. And sometimes, luckily with those type, you don't have to take it every day, but only the day you take it is like the day it works, just like the stimulants do, right? The day you take it is the day that works. But it's not the only way, right? Like you have to find other tools, journaling, exercise, coaching, meditation, tapping, like other ways to help manage the array of what ADHD can be. It show up on different people. So what is another myth that you commonly find yourself trying to explain either to parents or to adults that, you know, I know one myth I had was I got told I was going to outgrow this. And obviously that doesn't happen.
Well, so that there's a truth and a non-truth to it. So right, ADHD is a developmental disorder. And so the way I explain it to parents is this, and I'm petite, right? I'm less than 5 feet. So I'm a great example. Some people go through puberty when they're 12 and some through 17. And when they grow, some people make it to the 6 feet tall and some don't get over 5 feet. So if we think about it as a developmental disorder with ADHD, the concept is that they're not developing their capacity to attend, focus, have impulse control at the same pace compared to their peers. And some people over time may catch up, and some, like myself, may never. And they will always be small or they will always be behind. Because if you look at the data, there is a population that if we were to do scans of our brains, they will normalize towards the general population, and others will always have ADHD. And so, yes, it is developmental and some people grow up, but not everybody does. And so the reality is that those that don't will continue to need treatment and those that do won't. And then there's a small population that may not necessarily need medicine, but they will still need to use all of the behavioral tools that they have learned over the years. And every so often, they will have a threshold of responsibilities that will exceed the capacity for those tools. And they may, for that period of time, need to use medicine until they've kind of reestablished their norm. And it doesn't mean they've lost, and it doesn't mean it's terrible, but it just is. And, you know, I also think that a lot of the reason why there's this huge surge of ADHD right now is because so many of us are having to sit in front of a camera for so many hours, so much longer than we've ever had to do before. And this is not normal. And so it's an environmentally caused problem. We're just not meant to do this. And so a majority of people that previously wouldn't have been considered having ADHD seem to have it, but it's based on, you know, ADHD is the inability to concentrate or focus, right? Forgetfulness, distractibility that are causing an impairment in function in work, relationships, and or personal life or play, right? And so if you think about it, if you can't do your work because you can't get it done because it just seems like it's impossible because you can't focus or pay attention, well, if you have to sit in front of a computer for 10 hours and you've never had to do that before, it's exceeding your threshold, right? Well, we've had to do that a lot since COVID. It might be exceeding the majority of people's threshold. So I think that part of my theory that beyond just the FDA only allowing a certain amount and so on of stimulants is that probably the increase in diagnosis is an environmental piece, not over prescribing because there are just rogue, you know, companies that are just trying to make money. I think legitimately people have increasingly met criteria based on where we are.
And like you just mentioned, people can have periods of their life that, like you just said, environmental, like it could be as they just, you know, exceed their threshold. Like maybe they went from high school to college or from college to medical school or law school, or from now being the owner of their own company or now having a new role as an administrative role that requires a lot more responsibility and boring tasks that they weren't necessarily doing before. Or the birth of their first or second or third child, where again, the organization tools that they had in place are no longer there. Like, you know, like you said, with COVID, people were used to having kind of like a community to be able to do different things. And all of a sudden, nobody should be talking to each other or being in near each other because you don't know if you were a carrier, blah, blah, blah. And so all of a sudden, you were kind of supposed to do everything. And like you said, having to spend all these hours in front of the computer when we were used to walking our kids to school or doing different things. Yeah. And all of a sudden it's like, okay, we're homeschooling everyone. And it's like, wait, what? Like now I'm a teacher too. And so it just, you know, and it goes both ways, not just for men, for females, but, you know, it sometimes it's, we say it's easier picked up in males, but sometimes it's not because they are too proud or they don't want to tell people that they're quote unquote having to do things 10 times at work, you know, the mechanic or different things like that until coworkers start pointing out to them, hey, what's going on? Did you sleep? Are you drunk? Like, you know, and then they come in and talk about it. And then after they get the right diagnosis, they're like, oh my God, you changed my life. And I was like, not really. Like, it was just a little tweak. But those kind of things are important when we ourselves can't see it. That's why it's so important to have this conversation, because you might help diagnose your colleagues or you might be able to help diagnose your kiddos, right? And you can really change the trajectory of their life because of it.
Right. So there's a couple other myths. Well, they can be on the TV or on video games for hours, right? So there's this concept that, you know, why can they focus on that but not on their schoolwork? And so then I asked them, well, how well do you focus on the things that you enjoy? And then I want you to go sit in a conference room the next time you're there. And I want you to look around the room and pay attention at how long people focus. And so some people can sit and listen to that person, whether they're interested or not, the whole time. And other people can't. And so it's really the ability to sustain attention, whether you're interested or not, and the ability to sustain attention to uninteresting information. Their threshold with ADHD, not interested at all. But if there's something interesting, they're swooped right in. And it's really kind of an evolutionary created concept that, like, if there's something that needs to be gotten at, they're going to be better at it than maybe the kind of just the not ADHD person that might not, you know, they'll be like methodical and good at this, but the ADHD person will hone right in on something and not go if it's fascinating to them. And that's their skill set, where there are things about ADHD that makes it incredibly good to have. Right.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. And because I think that time blindness, when you're in the zone, as they say, time just stands still for you. And you are, your ability to, like you said, focus on something that has grabbed your attention is good, but it can be bad because then you over hyperfocus on something that maybe might have taken you a couple of hours. All of a sudden it's 10 hours later and you're still hooked on it because it feels so good as you're learning it. But yes, it can allow you to reach levels of understanding that, like you said, far exceeds maybe the non-ADHD brain, because they're not making all the connections that your brain might be making in that moment in time, and at a speed of lightning almost, compared to somebody else. You're like, what, you read all those books in how long of a period? And what did you do with that, right? And so, and I know that sometimes we get labeled as procrastinators, but it could have been that that stuff we needed to do was just a boring task in our mind, or we just assume we have plenty of time to get to it. Right. And then the deadline was really what pushes you to get to the edge.
Right. And so sometimes the reason that it gets pushed is because at that final hour, right, some other part of your brain lights up, and that adrenaline allows your brain to kind of create an attention that's other use that then gives you the focus that you need for that boring task, because now it's not boring, it's dire. So if it was not dire, it would be boring. But since it's like, oh, I gotta do this, it's now, and you can do it. So you have to wait till that end.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a great book called ADHD, A Hunter in a Farmer's World, that kind of talks about the concept of this ADHD, that they're hunters as opposed to farmers, and how our academic world is about how we're farmers and we plan and we sit and we do and everything's methodical, and that ADHD is kind of the concept of being this hunter, and how we just talked about that zoning in quality. And if you think about successful people with ADHD, they are entrepreneurs, maybe emergency medicine doctors. I'm sure you've met plenty of those. Just people who are extreme sports people, maybe mechanics, people who do hands-on type of work so that they're kind of engaged in their process as opposed to just kind of sitting and doing passively learning or teaching kind of stuff, because that's not what's going to be successful for them. And if they try to do the passive, they tend to really struggle. So figuring out, based on how your mind works, doing what works for you is important too.
Yeah. Yeah, these are all very important points. Like you said, realizing what lights you up, what seems fun for you is really the key. Because I know one of the myths is like, okay, well, once I complete X, Y, and C, then I can have my fun. And I think it's the opposite for the ADHD brain. You need to make sure you're doing something fun in order for you to complete and be more efficient and more effective. And I think that was the key for me, because I know I would never even make my own to-do list because I didn't want to reward myself for not having completed the important things. And not until I realized that I was already burned out from doing all the boring things, and I was never going to complete those because I hadn't given myself the dopamine that I needed.
Right. Yeah. So little snippets and then a reward, little snippets and then a reward, rewards along the way.
So tell me, how did you decide to set up retreats?
So for me, being a psychiatrist, you know, is sometimes hard, right? So I deal with lots of heavy stuff and managing all kinds of stuff. So I use my own techniques, ADHD techniques, as well as mindfulness techniques to kind of manage all of the work that I do. And that's done through cooking and meditation and pottery. And that's what kind of keeps me from not getting caught up in all the stuff. And so I love it and it's great. And so I have been working with people, and these are things that seem to be helpful with them. I do pottery with some of my patients, all the kids I work with. We do art when I do therapy at times with them. I brought clay in, we do that. Some kids make jewelry. We do meditation, whatever, as I said, works for whoever and whatever they need. And so over time, what I began to realize was a lot of docs in my community were having a lot of stress and burnout. And so I created a program for women physicians who seem to not really have time to, A, take care of themselves, and B, create a community for themselves. They seem to like feel like they were always alone and nobody understood. And so I made a program to kind of bring them together so that they could recognize that they're not alone and that there's other women just like them, and that they, that connection would give them a sense of buoyancy, empowerment, and that then they can do all these things that are helpful for me that may be helpful for them. And, you know, creativity is an incredibly wonderful source to rejuvenate our minds and our bodies and our brains. And I think that if it's not pottery, then it can be some other form of art or dance or music or whatever it is. But there's this thing that happens in your heart and your mind when you create and open yourself to exploring that is so important. And when we work so hard, we forget that being a child and regressing back into that place when you can be free and open is so important. And so that's what I try to bring. And so
how many retreats have you done? What do you have coming up? Tell us all the details.
So first I was doing local programs and they ran every other week, and that went really well. And so then we did a local retreat I did with two other doctors here. And then I have a retreat in the Berkshires that's in August. And then I'm doing a retreat in Portugal in April, 2024. And then I have plans with, so like I have the pottery studio in Italy, but I need to find a house that I am comfortable enough to use before that place happens. And the same thing, I have there's a place in two potters in Barcelona, a husband and wife. They have a studio in Barcelona, and then they have a studio in the mountains. So we would do half in the city of Barcelona and then half in the mountains. And there's this boutique hotel that's under renovation that's in the mountains, so that when that's complete, then we'll do that. And so we'll do both, because I think Barcelona is beautiful, but finding one house to house, you know, 8 to 10 women in Barcelona is difficult. So we would stay in the mountains and kind of go the 40-30 minutes, and then, you know, it'll be amazing, because then we can do this thing called a Reku fire, where you have this huge fire and you put all the clay inside with the glaze, and then it just comes out and it's like all lit up, and then as it cools, all these different colors and things, and it's amazing.
That's great. Yeah. So it's so important, like you said, to remember our playfulness, and to not just remember it, but to embody it, and to allow ourselves to give ourselves the permission to remember what it was like to have fun, and remember on purpose to enjoy and to choose joy, and to surround yourself with people who have that same willingness to try playfulness. And especially in an environment where you lean on each other and you understand each other, and there's no judgment, but other than just a support. Like, I think community is everything. And I do think that being able to find people who support that dream and who allow wonderful things like this to come to be is key, and allowing us to even dream of doing such a thing is key, because a lot of us are told, well, you're a physician, like, you don't need to do that. Like, why do you need to do that? Like, that sounds like a lot of work, right? But again, it's not work when it's something that is lighting your soul and making sure that your colleagues are staying in medicine or not. If they decide not to, that they're just living the life of their dreams, right?
100%. So there's a guy named Richard Louv who describes that, like, ADHD is actually an environmental deprivation disorder, right? So this concept of not being out in nature, not moving your body, not getting out there, that, like, if we don't actually, like, I don't know if you've ever met a kid who's like got ants in their pants, but if you let them run around for a little while, they kind of settle down for a bit. And so if we are, one of the treatments for ADHD, not long term forever, but one of the things to help us settle our minds and our bodies is to move, right? I mean, exercise is therapeutic. Moving is therapeutic. Communicating and engaging people is therapeutic. All of those things are. And so, yeah, and having people understand us and get us all therapeutic, all of those things. And so finding like-minded people that get us and understand us and want to do things, all of those things. And so, yeah, I mean, being out there in nature and making pottery and having fun and swimming and all of it earns you CME, which is even more fun.
Yeah.
And if you're a DO, AOA credits too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, retreats are definitely magical. My first one that I did in Costa Rica was just out of this world. And again, for that reason, like you just said, being able to soak in nature, being able to have discussions that we explore our feelings, we explore emotional regulation tools, and then realizing that, you know, where you are is perfect. Like, you don't need to be ahead or behind, and you don't need to compare yourself to your neighbor. You just have to know where you are is where you were meant to be. And then if you want to do a little bit or the whole enchilada, like, we're here for it, right? And that again gives you permission to just be. So if they want to come and do the pottery course, or they want to come and dance and swim, they can do all of that. Or they just want to do the pottery and sleep, they can do that too, you know?
Absolutely. Exactly.
Yeah.
So just providing the safe space for them to kind of just be.
And like you just said, like, who does not enjoy fun CME? Like, come on.
And so the place in Portugal is like rated one of the top 10 yoga places in the world.
Yeah.
According to Travel and Leisure. So it's like this incredible space in Portugal.
Do you already have a website where they can get on your,
absolutely,
like, on your like wait list or they can find out information. Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to share that with us?
Sure. It's at silverspaces.org.
Awesome. And she will email me all her stuff. And where else could they find you if they just want to know more about you, or if they want to see you as their physician, or if they want to just ask you questions so you can come give lectures for them?
So silverpsychiatric.com is the website I use to practice psychiatry. And then silverspaces.org is where you can find me for speaking or retreats, or if you want to do the local pottery and you live in Matthews, Charlotte area. And so those are how you find me.
Is there anything that I might have forgotten to ask you, or what would be one of the takeaway?
Let's think. I'm trying to think ADHD things. Oh, that people think that, if you're not disruptive, that you can't have ADHD, right? And, you know, I don't have ADHD, I have ADD. And so, of course, in 1987, the DSM changed it and everybody is ADHD. It's an attentive type, combined type, or hyperactive type. It's all ADHD. So girls are diagnosed less because they tend to be quieter, fidgety in place, as opposed to running around. Boys tend to be more, move their whole body when they have it. So girls get diagnosed later, but doesn't mean they don't have it.
Awesome. Okay. And one last question that I usually ask my guests is, what do you see yourself doing in 3 years from now for fun? Not that you're not having fun. I'm already loving everything that you're doing, but what is one of the main things that you're like, oh my God, I can't wait to see this.
In 3 years. I know that my husband told my daughter, it might be 2 years or 3 years, that we will probably be traveling Japan, because when she graduates, that's what we're going to go do. And I'm a big traveler, so hopefully we'll get to do that.
Yes, I can't wait to do that myself, too. I've been looking into the cherry blossoms, and I think sometime in March or April is when they tend to do that. So I'm going to see, you know, if that happens this year, 2024 or the following year. But yeah, it's travel really lights us up and really helps us to continue to integrate our curiosity. And so again, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you today. I can't wait to share all your links. And if people are even considerate, they need to go and look, find out more information to reach out to you. Because again, you might not even be aware that you even enjoy this until you even give it a try. I know when I was in college, I didn't even know I could paint until I had to take a class. And all of a sudden I was like, whoa, where'd that come from? Right. So you just realize that you might have this creative side to you if you just give yourself the opportunity to look into it.
Thank you. It was lovely chatting.
Likewise.